Welcome everybody to the Comic Tree. Today I am joined by just Joey. Hello, Joey.
Hello.
Because Derek is ill or dead or something like that. Hopefully not dead, but you know, sometimes it happens. Well, we're back for part two of the Hellboy and Mignolaverse. Episodes on the comic shoot. Yeah, I'm pretty excited. Can't get enough Hellboy. How about you, Joey?
Good times.
I guess before we start, as always, this is mine and Joey's opinion. The views and opinions, like I said, here are ours. They don't necessarily reflect people that work for All Comic or the site or anything else. So if you don't like it, you don't have to listen. Nobody's making you. And if they are, well, I'm sorry. It's probably just a fake gun. Don't worry about it.
Rough deal,
Yeah. I'm sorry for anybody that's forced to listen to this terribleness. So it's kind of weird not having Derek here.
I can imagine. How many episodes is this now?
12? I want to say 12.
Yeah, sounds about right. No Derek.
Yeah. He's kind of a bastard that way. Derek, if you listen, and I know you pretty much don't, you're a bastard. So there you go.
Huzzah!
Hey, where the hell were we? We were talking lots of Hellboy. Anybody that was listening last week, obviously go check out episode 11 and catch yourselves up. But
we covered a lot of main bases of some of the main aspects of Hellboy. Gave it a good overview, I think, for people that might not necessarily be familiar with it or only have a passing familiarity because of the movies.
Oh, right. And Joey totally took over.
We went through most of the...
Control freak fuckface main... that's talking now! See, now he stopped.
Take it away, sir.
Everybody remembers you took over the show, you dirty bastard.
Yeah, well.
Fucking guy. We're not supposed to be all organized and on top of things. It's just off the top of our heads, you bastard.
We're on darkness calls.
See, he's even doing it now. I'm giving him shit and he's still doing it, everybody. You need to comment and say how much of an asshole he is. You still haven't done it for Derek, but do it for Joey.
Harsh.
Do it for little Joe.
Harsh toke.
You dirty hippie. Okay, fuck it. We're gonna start at the entrance of Mr. Duncan Figueredo. We did kind of talk about it a little bit at the end of last week before I realized, oh shit, we're at an hour, let's stop. And on the fly, we decided to do this follow-up. But as anybody that follows Hellboy and the universe knows, the entrance of Duncan Figueredo was big. Not only was Mignola getting somebody uber-competent on art to basically take the reins from him, but it also led to arguably some of the best stories ever under Hellboy. And obviously led to the Hellboy and Hell stuff. So Darkness Calls was a 5-issue series. Or was it 6?
I think it was... Yeah, it's 6.
I thought it was... Oh, yeah, there's 6. Okay, I was looking at... 6 was just... Number 5 was released in August, and number 6 wasn't released until November.
Oh, okay.
So that's why I'm missing it. So, okay, it was 6. 6 fantastic issues, regardless.
Yeah, this is one of the better ones, probably.
I had to go back and read everything, like I said, on the last show. My first issue ever was the Fury number 1. So I actually, Duncan Figueredo was the first Hellboy artist I ever got to witness and enjoy, I guess.
Right.
So I'm quite attached to him. So going back and reading Darkness Calls... was just fantastic. What did you think when you first picked up Darkness Calls number 1 and you got to see this new artist who is like hyper-detailed Mignola, basically?
Well, exactly what you said. He's, you know, the style looks comparable to Mignola's. They're fairly similar, but there's just a lot more detail. There's a lot more to look at throughout the book. So it's, I don't know, it's cool, man. It looks great.
Was it a little bit jarring, or were you just like, okay, I see where this guy's coming from, like, let's go. You're ready for the series.
It didn't bother me at all. I thought it was a really a smooth transition because, like you say, the styles are fairly similar, right?
Well, yeah, and I think maybe that was part of his Mignola's choice in picking somebody like Duncan Figueredo, because he does have a bit of a similar style. I also kind of think that looking at his, like some of his newer stuff, like MPH with Mark Miller that's coming out.
Yeah, I just heard about that one. Yeah, okay.
They've been talking about that for a year, it feels like. If you look at those, you still see Duncan Figueredo's style, but it's not quite as Hellboy-esque. So I think that he kind of changed up his style a little bit to fit the universe.
Yeah, that makes sense. A lot of the artists in the Mignola-verse kind of have a fairly similar tone to them.
Yeah, especially like the BPRD guys.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm sure he's looking for a certain type of artist and a certain style. Like, I mean, you look at BPRD, you look at Guy Davis, and then it transitions to Tyler Crook. Like, that was, you know, that was pretty close as far as the cartoony look to it. You know, they were, like, Crook was just the perfect match, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and they always use different people for different arcs, different series and everything. So when it looks similar like that, it's not as jarring to people who follow the books, right?
Yeah, like, I found a lot, I think I mentioned last time, when they had Richard Corbin do art, like, that was jarring. That was like, holy shit. Totally different. And I mean, I understand lots of people like Richard Corbin.
Yeah, I remember you talking about that.
You know, lots of people like him, and you know, he's popular and a great artist and everything, but it just, I don't know, didn't do it for me. I didn't feel Hellboy-ish to me. I don't know.
Do you read any of his, just quick little sidetrack here, because I know you don't
I don't read anything else with him.
Okay, so you haven't checked out the Edgar Allan Poe stuff from Dark Horse?
No.
It's a pretty different art style.
Is it?
Yeah.
Maybe he was trying to fit the Mignola-verse a little bit more then.
Yeah, probably.
Because, I mean, yeah. I mean, I saw the previews for, like, The Red and the Raven or whatever the hell that was.
Yes.
I saw the previews, and it didn't do it for me. I don't know.
Oh, fair enough.
But anyway, back to Duncan Figueredo and Darkness Calls here.
Yes.
Just an exceptional arc, as we've been saying. I feel like this is really the beginning of where everything's kind of starting to come together.
Yeah, I agree.
Everything's really almost bottlenecking to where it's, you know, headed towards Hellboy and Hell.
Yeah.
And lots of Baba Yaga in this one. So,
which is fantastic, because as we said last time, she's a great character.
Exactly.
Lots of witches in this one. Very cool stuff.
If I remember right, they had some, like, more talk of the Ragnarok. And how do you say the stupid tree name? I love Vikings, and I can't say anything.
I think it's Yggdrasil.
Yeah, something along that line. You know, they're talking about that. So there's another Mignola bringing in other stuff. I mean, obviously Viking stuff, and I'm in.
Yeah, definitely.
So that's really, really cool. But I think the next one, the Wild Hunts, which was 8 issues, might have been even better. I feel like the first Darkest Calls was Mignola or Figueredo's kind of intro to the world and, like, you know, hey, this is me. I feel like he was almost more comfortable in the Wild Hunt.
Yes.
And then some of the fight scenes were better.
Yes.
And, you know, the characters, and like, it looked a little bit better. And this was more of the Arthurian stuff, like Excalibur was involved and stuff, right? This is where he pulled
the
sword.
This is when he first gets Excalibur. There's a lot of Arthurian stuff. This is when, like, Morgan Le Fay shows up, and I think Merlin's in this one. And you know, yeah, you're right. I was flipping through Darkness Calls when we were talking about that, and now I'm flipping through the Wild Hunt, and I think the line work is a bit cleaner in the Wild Hunt.
Yeah, it's just it's been a while since I read it. I mean,
yeah,
less than a year maybe, but I definitely distinctly remember. Oh yeah, okay. It looks like he's a little more comfortable with the characters and everything, and it was just better. You know, I mean, and everything that Duncan does is great, but, you know, just one step better than the last go-round.
Yeah, I agree.
So,
and the Wild Hunt itself is pretty, well, I was going to say it's pretty wild. That's pretty crazy, too. The English gentlemen who go out to hunt the giants.
Right. Oh, and this is the one where Hellboy starts fighting. There's, like, what, 4 of them against him in the field, and it, like, just turns into this big bloody massacre.
Yeah, yeah. He regrows the horns and stuff.
Right, and he just, like, loses his shit, basically.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I do remember that. That was a powerful scene. That was right next to, like, a river or something, if I remember the scene right.
Yeah.
And, Yeah, that was crazy. That was some of Duncan Fegredo's best work in the series.
I think so too.
Aside from like the final battle that Hellboy has on top of the castle with the big dragon.
Yes.
Which we'll get to that. That was Nemu or whatever.
Yeah. Which. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, she gets her body back in Wild Hunt.
Right.
Or maybe at the end of Darkness Calls. Either way, she's the main antagonist in the Wild Hunt. So she's basically got all the crazy fantasy antagonist villain guys, like all the giants and other monsters and everything, that she's basically going to send against humanity.
Right.
Good times.
It is good times. you can never go wrong when Mignola writes a monster into a story, and you get somebody, either himself or, you know, whoever, really, that he works with, like, drawing it. Like, it's just crazy. And he's so a part of the design phase, and because, I mean, obviously he's an artist.
Yes.
First and foremost, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes.
So he's so involved in the design phase, and then, you know, people take it kind of from there. I was actually reading the BPRD trade, Hell on Earth number 4 today, with...
Which one's number 4?
I just forgot it.
Is the one after Russia?
Yeah, the one right after Russia. The Long Death. Yeah. The Long Death and the other one.
Yes, okay.
Anyway, the Long Death, or the first one with Tyler Crook, because the Long Death has James Herron. In the sketchbook in the back, it was just showing, like, they were working off of, like, old Guy Davis designs.
Okay.
And Tyler Crook was, like, trying to nail it down or whatever. And then they had, like, Duncan Fegredo designing the body that they're trying to make for the Master.
Okay.
Return of the Master, right?
Yeah.
And it shows Fegredo's designs, and then it's like, it shows a Mignola page, and he redid it, and he simplified it. It's like, to Duncan, Tyler, and Scott. And he, like, redoes it, and all the little arrows to it. Like, he's so involved in it. I mean, as he should be.
That's awesome.
But it was just cool. Just, you know, he took Duncan Fegredo's design and had, you know, the heart of the design, but simplified it, and...
Yes.
You know, little things like, hey, I wanted to make the right hand of doom looking hand that this body had, you know, tone it down a little bit, not so obvious.
Well, he knows exactly what he wants then.
Yeah, like everything he's got in his head. I remember reading an interview with Mignola, and he said he does a lot of his planning and whatnot in the shower. And he said he'll just, that's the quietest place, or like the, you know, he just gets away from everything, and he just thinks about everything. And a lot of his stories and ideas obviously start there, or, you know, that kind of environment, but he says he knows what he's going to do. Like, it's all in his head. It's a matter of, you know, putting it down on paper, but it's always in his head.
Time elapse.
Yeah. So, I mean, you imagine all the stories he's got on the go. How do you fit all that in your head and still be able to function as a person?
Yeah, exactly. So, that's a good way of putting it.
It's really, really cool. I'm definitely, definitely stoked to see that he's still, you know, he's so involved, and he's so... I don't know. He still loves the universe that he created 20 years ago. Cause I'm sure there's lots of people out there that, you know, oh, I created this character, but, you know, that's all I can do now. Nobody wants me to do anything else. And
they'd be sick of doing the same titles or characters for that many years, but which, you know, as we'll get to later, BPRD is probably like the best it's ever been right now.
Oh yeah. It's definitely.
And it's like, you know, 118 issues in.
Yeah. 17 or 18, something like that.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I don't know how they keep it so fresh, but the guy's just got that many ideas.
Well, yeah, and I mean, he had somebody like John Arcudi or whatever in there. And,
yes.
And, I mean, he brings a hell of a lot to the table. I mean, Mignola said many times that a lot of the BPRD credit goes to him because...
I can imagine, yeah.
Mignola has the base idea, but he'll, like, John will actually write the scripts and kind of go from there. And a lot of the characters that we know and love were created by John.
Excuse me.
So... It's just cool. I mean, I love just the group that Mignola keeps around him, and obviously Scott Alley, the forever editor
of the universe,
you know, deserves lots of props for helping with ideas and making sure stuff goes through. And I'm sure he's
writing too.
He co-writes on Abe right now. Abe Sapien.
Yes.
He did a BPRD one with Liz. Just before Russia, I want to say, where they're in the trailer park. Monsters,
yes, he did. Yeah.
I want to say it's called.
Yeah, it is.
And those are the two that come to mind right away. He might have done more. I'm actually not sure.
Those are the ones that I would think of as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, I could Google it, but I really don't think he's done a lot outside of that. But yeah, it's just great to see all those kind of people that he's got around him.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that helps him keep, you know, fresh ideas, like somebody, hey, you should do this, or hey, this is a cool idea, or so.
It must help, yeah.
And he's always the first guy to say, you know, let's give these guys credits and whatnot. I Googled it anyway. He did The Dead Remembered, which is around the Monsters time. That was with Liz.
Okay.
And then on Hell on Earth, he did the Pickens County Horror.
I think that's the only one that I do not have.
Oh, The Transformation of J.H. O'Donnell and The Abyss of Time.
Okay. Oh, what? He did The Abyss of Time?
Apparently.
Oh, shit. That's a really good one.
Yeah, that's definitely, that's one of the, like, I don't want to say better ones, but, you know, they're all great, but that was one of the ones that just stands a little bit taller.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Testament to Mike Mignola, you know, thinking ahead and having the story planned out so much ahead of time. Actually, in The Wild Hunt, there's a bunch of stuff that ties in with Hellboy in Hell later on.
Oh, is his trademark foreshadowing?
Yeah, yeah. Well, one of the Dukes of Hell is guarding the bridge into the castle where Morgan
Le Fay is. Oh, that was in this one?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought that was the next one.
Yeah, no, that's in this one, and he ends up fighting him in, like, I want to say the first or the second issue of Hellboy in Hell.
Right, he's like, oh, you can't move me, there's no way, or whatever. I remember that. And then you see the little demon guy, the flying one that's buzzing around, basically. I remember that.
Yeah, the little flying one is in The Wild Hunt too. He's the one who says, "Remember me when you take your throne or whatever when you get to hell."
Yeah, yes, you know, and then there's another cool stuff like that. I mean, obviously, lots of comic people, writers, or even story writers will foreshadow stuff, but you know, little stuff like that you just, you know, you don't think of, or
yeah.
You know, you might just kind of forget, like the guy on the bridge, you know. Oh, Hellboy defeated him. Okay, that's it. We'll never see him again. Who cares? We don't remember him, right?
Yes.
So, yeah, that is cool. I do remember reading the Hellboy in Hell going, oh, that's wicked. Oh, I just had crazy deja vu. Oh, weird.
Oh. Okay, yeah, there's Merlin, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of fantasy and mythology and weird stuff like that in Wild Hunt.
Yeah, he really does go all out with that one.
Yeah, I think this is one of this one's got everything in it. This is Mignola on full display.
Yeah. I think we covered The Bride of Hell and Others and The Crooked Man, didn't we?
Yeah, I remember you went through those ones quickly, the short story collections with Corbin and everything.
Yeah, I don't remember actually talking about the Hellboy in Mexico storyline.
Go ahead.
It's in The Bride of Hell and Others. And that was one of the popular ones. And I actually think that was, I almost want to say that was Corbin that did the art for that. But that was just a really cool story. They actually did a follow-up in Dark Horse Presents. How did they go? It was after the events of Mexico, and like Hellboy like gets married to some chick in Mexico because he's still all drunk and crazy after he loses his buddy in Mexico, the wrestler guy or whatever. That's just a story worth noting, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
If anybody sees the single issue, or obviously if you get the trade, the Hellboy in Mexico is a really, really cool one. But skipping over trades 10 and 11, because they're just kind of mixes and matches, number 12, also the 6th Library Edition. Yes, it is a big one. This is The Storm and the Fury. This is the combination of years and years and years and years.
And a few more years.
And a few more years. Sorry, I'm texting at the same time. Live show, everybody. It's fun.
Oh, terrible.
I know. It's important stuff. We got these yappy-ass dogs down the hall, and they've just been driving us nuts, so we're going to, like, go open the door and let them out or something because they need to go poo. Like, the owner hasn't been there around all day. It's just driving us nuts.
Terrible.
Yeah, terrible owners. If you can't take care of a dog, don't have a dog. And don't bring it into an apartment. Jesus Christ. anyway, hey, off topic. Don't you guys love that?
Yeah. Oh, you know what? Storm and the Fury has a really good... they've all got an acknowledgement from Mignola. One of them has an acknowledgement from Fegredo. This one is, of course, for Duncan Fegredo and Dave Stewart, who delivered the goods far beyond anything I could have possibly imagined. And, of course, for Scott Alley, too.
Oh yeah, he loves to do those, and he loves to, you know, give everybody props and stuff. It's always cool. A lot of those get skipped over. A lot of people just pass by them. But if you see them in the trades, just check it out. It's really, really cool.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm still texting, so you can talk.
Okay. Storm of the Fury. Yeah, like Tyler said, this is everything coming together. All of the little prophecies and foreshadowing from the previous 11 trades worth of material all comes together here, and it's epic to say the least.
To say the least, yeah.
You find out basically, go for it.
I was just going to say these are probably my favorite two out of the whole run, everything leading up to it. Again, I read The Fury number one first, so I got a, you know, extra special attachment to it, but.
Well, I reread this one this week, and I think I have to agree. You know what? There's some stuff that when we were talking about them last week, some of the stuff that I thought happened in Wild Hunt actually happens in this. This is one of the really awesome ones with Arthur getting the sword and the two big armies going up against each other, and Hellboy's battle with the dragon. I mean, this one's just epic.
Yeah, it's got Arthur, because Hellboy refuses to take the crown.
Yes.
So the ghost of Arthur and all the soldiers and stuff help Hellboy against like demons, and it's just epic battle. There's that big crazy dude that reminds me of the one ogre with the white palm on his face from, or the one orc.
He does look like him, yeah.
That's every time I see him, I think of that big dude that tries to fight.
He looks like him. Yeah, he's that hedgehog that Nemu transformed.
Right, right, right. And is the pig guy in this one a lot, too?
Yeah, he is. He's in From Darkness Calls right up to this one. He's pretty prominent in the story.
He's a cool guy. I really like the design, and I really liked how Fabrito did him. I mean, he's not a big character, per se, but... I mean,
he's interesting.
That was the guy. He's been around for a long time, right? Because he's pissed off about Hellboy back, like in the Iron of the Shoe Horse way back, wasn't it? Or Horseshoe?
Yeah. You're on the right track. Yeah, that's the guy.
Yeah, and then he comes on, and so that was you know 15 years ago, and he comes back, and he still wants revenge on Hellboy, and you know he gets this big pig body, and then can never die. It's Queen Mab or whatever curses him, isn't it?
Yeah. That's right, and he like sets all of this end of the world shit into motion because he wants revenge so badly.
Yeah, I still remember that wicked that scene where he's trying to hang himself, but he can't die, and he's just like hanging there, and he's like so sad, remorseful, and stuff. Like just a wicked drawn panel, and just a wicked feeling, and like everything, just greatness in that.
Yeah, it's crazy. Page. Hellboy empties a clip into him afterwards.
Oh, yeah, like nothing, doesn't
do nothing anything. Happens, yeah, like, sorry, pal, throws the gun, walks away.
Right, I like, I was just reading, just Wikipedia real quick, and this is the one where Hellboy gives up his eye.
Oh, yeah, he pays the debt that he owes to the Baba Yaga.
Yeah, finally, because Baba Yaga lost an eye to him, so then, yeah, in order for her to help him, he gives an eye. But it just says, and it made me remember, it said, the witnesses... Or they witness Hellboy approaching their position at the base of the tower, and they mistake him for Odin and then for Thor because of his hammer-like stone hand and his missing eye.
Yeah, that's exactly what happens. The three witches stand in there.
Yeah, like, and that's just cool, again, because, I mean, it's Ragnarok, and, you know, they're talking about all this. It's got Norse stuff. It's got Arthurian stuff. Like, everything that Mignola does in Hellboy is so intermingled and intertwined, and sometimes it's hard to tell where one myth ends and the other one begins, fable or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
You know, it's just great.
I'm glad you reminded me about that part where they, like you said, they mistake him for Odin because of the one eye, and then Thor because of his hammer fist.
Well, I mean, he's got the one eye, and he's got the hood up.
Yes.
And that's one of my favorite panels. It's a close-up on his face, and he's got the hood up, and I think all he says is, like, where is she?
Yeah, that's right.
He's looking for Alice. And that's one of my favorite panels of all time. It just goosebumps, and it's just so good because he's just like, I'm on a mission, and nobody's going to fuck with him, right?
Well, one of my favorite panels of all time is in this book as well, actually. It's where... What's the Irish girl's name again? Is that Alice?
Yeah. Alice... I don't remember her last name. Something Irish. Monaghan? Monaghan. Something.
Yeah, whatever. That's right. Jeez, good memory. Okay. Yeah.
No, I'm using Wikipedia for that name.
Okay, fair enough. she hands off Excalibur to the old British guy that ghostly maiden saved him when he was shot in World War I, and then he traveled England and settled down. He's been waiting for something.
Oh, by the pub there, right?
Yeah, oh yeah. So then she hands off the sword and you flip the page and he's rocking the full suit of armor and he's being crowned by that ghost behind him.
Right, and he's on the horse, right?
He is later on when he's got the army.
Oh, okay. I thought he was on the horse and everything, but I could be mixing that up.
Oh, it's such a good panel, man. Like, that whole scene is just epic, epic, powerful stuff.
Yeah, it's, I mean, everything. Everything is just so great. Like, I can't say how great and how good and how awesome this is enough times.
Yeah.
It's just beyond great. Like, I mean, you look at anything Marvel and DC does, and Derek's not here to back himself up, but he definitely at one point had asked me, like, you know, where does it rate? And I said, oh, it's better than anything Big 2 ever. And yes. He's like, well, and then he's like, what about Saga? I'm like, oh, it's way better than Saga.
Oh, I agree.
Like, it puts Saga to shame as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and Saga's amazing, but...
But that's the point, right?
Yeah,
and definitely. A lot of people don't get how great it is and how it doesn't compare to other stuff because it's so much better.
Yeah, there's more stuff that I could tell people about Hellboy, you know, crazy details and cool myths that he puts in and everything, but thanks for the little side message.
Yeah, I try.
Okay, so everything really well, but it's tough to get across all the little details that he puts into the stories without just flat out telling people everything that happens.
Which we've done a pretty good job of telling everybody what happens.
Yeah, I guess so.
Essentially, you know, but it's been around long enough where if you haven't read it by now, you know, you're behind and you need to read it. I almost don't even consider them spoilers. It's more like, you know, you're getting little hints and glimpses and a little bit of story, you know, but you're not seeing the whole picture. You're not sitting down. You're not reading, you know, the 6 library editions in one sitting, yeah. And you know, not sleeping for 2 days because it's that good. And then you start to picture everything and you start to get a better idea of what's going on. And you see, you know, you read the 3rd library edition, for example.
Yes.
And you see one little thing and you kind of like, oh, okay. And then 3 editions later, you're like, holy shit, I remember that guy from this story because I just read it.
And it seemed like a minor detail, right?
Yeah, right? Like, it's so I think as much as we're saying, they're still not getting the whole picture. They're also not getting to witness the art.
Yes.
You know, so I don't feel so bad about it. You know, I mean, we've pretty much, like you said, even last time, we pretty much said the whole idea of stuff and our favorite parts. And it's just... I don't know. I don't feel like you could ruin something like this with a quote unquote spoiler.
Yeah, I agree. I fully agree with that. It's a good point.
There's just too much stuff that's in these pages to ruin it, quote unquote.
Yeah. And you know what? We could tell you something that happens, but until you see it, you don't understand how well done it is.
Yeah, and you know, you might not understand why we're going so apeshit crazy over it, or that. You know how passionate we really are about it. It's something better than anything. It is both of our favorite series. It's right up there with Derek, and
yes.
Derek reads a hell of a lot of Big 2. So, you know, I think that says a lot. Considering,
yeah, I was really pleased that he enjoyed it as much as he did. To be honest,
well, yeah, how tainted he is with the Big 2, right? You know, trust me, guys. It took me a long time, and Derek's not here to defend himself. So, and you guys all know that I give him a hard time anyway. So, I'm gonna just continue doing it. Especially because he didn't show up today. But he even recently, I would say when he started working for me the first time, he wasn't reading a lot, if any, indie. And we really pushed him into it. So I'm glad that he's read this now, you know, and because he hears how I talk about it and how you talk about it and how generally it's how it's spoken of in comic circles.
Yeah, we review everything from the Mignolaverse on the site.
Yeah, that's the one thing that I don't think we ever miss anything, unless like something batshit crazy happens.
And yeah, we miss, if like, we're if you and I are both really stacked with reviews, then maybe a book will go missed, but it's really rare.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, and I mean, again, this is not a shot to necessarily to everybody else.
No, definitely not.
It's just something that doesn't get as much attention as it should.
Yes.
and it needs to be out there. I mean, we try to do, you know, the little smaller creator stuff and, you know, help out guys that, excuse me, email us and like, hey, can you cover my book that's coming out? It's like, yeah, we'll see what we can do. And most of the time we cover it.
Yeah, definitely.
But I mean, the big two really don't need us to say, hey, this is great, you should read it.
Because they also don't go out of their way to help us out with review copies, and the smaller publishers do, so you know, we should do those.
Oh, they don't help us out with shit. They don't retweet. Marvel and DC don't retweet anything. They don't Facebook anything. They don't... Nothing. They don't respond to emails. Nothing. I get no contact. Basically, we're doing it because we love those comics, and that's how it should be, regardless. Because
we like them, yeah.
But, you know, it's just... I mean, Dark Horse treats us great. Dark Horse is awesome.
They probably treat us best out of anybody.
Yeah, they really want to get their stuff out there. They really want to make sure, you know, that if somebody wants to cover their stuff or interview one of their creators, that they're going to help them. And they're going to make sure that, hey, I'm going to set you up. Well, as a matter of fact, we have an interview with Christopher Golden coming up.
Yes, next talking week, about Baltimore.
When you hear this, it'll be Monday, so hopefully it's out around the same time. But yes, talking about Baltimore. Which I don't really want to talk about here just because it's not Mignolaverse, even though Mignola is
not Mignolaverse. He writes with Mignola on it, but separate universe.
Yeah. So, and it's something else that you definitely need to check out.
Absolutely.
I was just kind of looking over the interview and something caught my eye. Have you read any of the Hellboy novels?
I have not read any of the novels. No.
I picked up The Lost Army on eBay for like $7. Something. It was the first Hellboy novel. It was Mignola and Golden that did it.
Yeah, yeah.
Totally awesome. Definitely, oh, yeah, okay. Definitely should read it.
Awesome. You know what? Comic books have ruined me for novels.
Yeah, I know. I have a whole stack of books I got to read, like novel books. And I've been on such a comic kick lately. Like, I do that Goodreads.com thing. And I, like, you rate books and keep track of what
you read. Yeah, I see it on Facebook there.
Yeah, and, you know, my goal or something was like 100 books. And that counts trades as far as I'm concerned. This year, since January 1st, I've read 33 trades or
very
collections.
Nice. Very
and
nice.
Every one of them has been comics, right?
Well,
so
yeah.
I haven't gotten to read any books because I've just been on such a comic kick, but you are right that, you know, sometimes you're like, hey, I wonder if so-and-so drew this, how cool that would look. And
yeah, exactly. You know, why read a novel when you could be reading a comic book?
terrible. But, you know, you and I... Because we know the characters and we can envision how, you know, Mignola would draw it or how Ben Stenbeck would draw it or something. You know, we know The Lost Army in particular was a great read. I haven't been able to read anything else yet. There's some stuff that Mignola wasn't even really involved in.
Okay.
Like the most recent novels, it's called like The Wolf and the Fire and the Eyes or something.
I heard about this one.
Duncan Figueredo did the covers for it. And I think Mignola just kind of lent out the character. Like, I don't think he co-wrote anything. It was just somebody else.
That he trusts, though, obviously.
Oh, of course. I'm sure it's still okay. But
yeah.
the novels that actually have Mignola and Golden writing, I think, are the ones that you should check out. Definitely The Lost Army. I think I read that. It was 200 pages, approximately. I'm kind of just throwing that number out there. And I think I read it in, like, 2 days. Like, it was really good.
Awesome.
So definitely something to check out for Hellboy fans. Like, I read it after Hellboy in Hell, I think number 4 came out.
Okay.
And I knew that the wait was going to be forever.
Yeah,
and
of course.
And it was like, well, I'm going to reread stuff, but I wouldn't mind reading some new Hellboy, or at least new to me. Which, I mean, that's brand new. That was printed in 1997 and I've never read it. So very new to me. I haven't read any of the Odd Jobs stuff or Otter Jobs. I'm not sure about that, but
no, I haven't read any of the side Hellboy stuff other than, one that I know you and I are both a big fan of, Midnight Circus.
Oh yes. That's good stuff. Mignola and Duncan Figueredo in a graphic novel,
as young Hellboy,
as terrible as people think those are. And man, Duncan Figueredo, you think his art is good on the Storm and the Fury and all those, he just takes it up another level. Between he does some ink washes in between pages where Dave Stewart colors, and just the two together, it's just fantastic. That
insane.
Needs a big collection.
Insane.
That, like, the collection size that it was in wasn't good enough. Like, it needs to be like a blown up. Like, I want to see like a fucking artist edition of that. Like, that's that good.
I lent this graphic novel to a friend who had never read any Hellboy before, and he was fucking blown away by it. He really, really enjoyed it. So for anybody who maybe is interested in getting into some Hellboy, check that one out.
That's true. And it's set before, you know, basically Seed of Destruction. You know, it's
yeah, you don't need to know all the lore and all the shit that's happened in the main Hellboy universe to enjoy it. But there are, you know, for fans, there are some cool tie-ins to Hellboy and Hell.
Definitely.
Like Astaroth, Hellboy's uncle, who shows up throughout the Hellboy series, plays a pretty big role in this graphic novel.
Mm-hmm. Hey, just to go back to the novels for a minute, I was wrong. I knew Mignola was involved. He just did art and illustrations inside.
Oh, okay, so there are some illustrations.
Yeah, just a few little ones. Like, did you read Joe Golub?
No, but I remember you and I talking about this one.
Yeah, I got like the special signed edition. That's that good. There's a couple of pages where he'll just kind of draw, you know, what's on the page, basically. But it's not like a super, it's just black and white, you know, it's just pencils and ink. But he did that in Lost Army. So I guess it's mostly written by Christopher Golden.
Okay.
Which
the guy can write up a storm.
Yeah, as is the follow-up, The Bones of Giants, which is just Golden and Mignola doing some illustrations and cover.
Okay.
When I find Bones of Giant, I'm going to read it. But that's one, definitely check the novels out, at least those two.
Sounds good.
Just wanted to get back to that, since we were talking about, and that's why when you said, well, you know, there's no images, and I'm in the back of my head of going, I don't know, I kind of remember something about images, and I'm like, maybe I'm just losing my mind. So, hey, the internet helps out once again, people. Well, it makes me look smarter than I am.
Huzzah! I know that a lot of the novels that Mignola's involved in some sort of capacity usually have, you know, sparse illustrations in them, at least.
If I'm looking at this, all I'm seeing is covers. I'm not seeing anything about illustrations after.
Oh, okay. All right. I could be wrong. Fair enough.
After those first two, the initial two, like there's one by Brian Hodge and Tommy Snygoski.
Okay.
Fuck, don't. Sorry, man. They're just other writers, and it doesn't mention anything about any kind of illustration. So maybe they just dropped that and it just went to like a straight novel.
Well, basically, there's a ton of Hellboy out there.
Oh yeah, I mean, okay, there's like the cartoon Hellboy animation ones that were out there, Sword of Storms and Blood and Iron.
Oh yeah, I heard about those.
I got those Blu-rays; they're really good. It's got Ron Perlman and Selma Blair and Doug Jones doing the voices. So everybody that and John Hurt. Is in it. So everybody that did the movie voiced characters, their respective characters in these. Cool. So it's cool. I mean, it's not quite Mignola comic canon stuff. Yeah, I think it goes more along with like the movie and stuff they couldn't follow up on.
I would have thought so, yeah.
But it's still cool. I mean, it's just an interesting little, you know, you want some Hellboy, just throw it in and away you go, right? So, there's everything. Hellboy and Mignola has really branded him well, I think. I don't think there's anything that's like stupid, like, you know, Hellboy bikinis or something. You know, ridiculous. Yeah. Like he hasn't given out the face or name to, you know, something like he's not a Gene Simmons, I guess is my point.
Where they've Gene kept Simmons the has brand strong too, like condoms. Oh fuck, Hellboy condoms. Can you imagine?
the right hand of doom
with an Excalibur,
the middle
Rubber sword,
the middle penis of doom. I don't know. That's terrible.
Did we want to talk about any of the other Mignolaverse books?
But then we're going to have a third part show.
I suppose we could just mention them, what there is.
Well, I know we kind of mentioned them before.
Okay.
Okay, they're well, just quick, there's Abe Sapien that has an ongoing now. He originally just had a couple of miniseries, and then they realized, hey, people actually like him, so let's do an ongoing, and that's with Scott Eilie right now. Lobster Johnson has his miniseries / ongoing. It's, you know, you'll get three or four stories, and then it'll go away for a couple months or a year, and then it'll come back. There's Witchfinder, which we haven't had for a while, actually.
No, there's a new one coming in August, though.
Yes, I was getting to that.
Oh, sorry. You're the one who reminded me about it last time.
Dirty bastard. And then, obviously, BPRD has been the only other, like, constant ongoing. And then Sledgehammer 44, which is a new one. I also heard that there is rumor of another one coming.
Oh, I hope so. Both of the miniseries of Sledgehammer were awesome.
Oh, well, yeah, that too. But no, I meant another series. Another character is getting a series.
Oh, no kidding. Who else would they do?
I see. I don't know. I heard through, who does he work for?
Like a Howard series or a Liz series. That's all I could think of.
I can't remember who he works for. He works for, I think he does some stuff on CBR and some stuff on like an actual like news, like Huffington Post or something like that.
Oh, okay.
And he just kind of like slyly mentioned that he knows what it is already. And then he wouldn't tell me because he's a fucker. Even like Mark Tweedle. See, every time we talk about Hellboy, I mention this kid. This guy. Of course. Sorry, not kid. Force of habit. Even he didn't know about it. So I guess that's how secretive it is. So who knows when that'll be announced. And I mean, if it's... McDowell's not at ECC, CCCC, so I don't think it'll be this weekend. So maybe like... what's next? New York?
Well, I don't even know, man.
Yeah. Maybe New York's next. So anyway, hopefully it'll be announced this year. But yeah, apparently something is getting another series, a mini slash ongoing slash whatever's going on. So I don't know how McDowell is going to write anything else.
Holy shit. Well, I'll obviously be buying it.
Well, if it's got McDowell's name on it, that goes without saying. He could be writing about... Okay, well, if he's writing My Little Pony, I probably won't buy it, but...
Probably wouldn't, yeah.
You know, unless it's like zombie, demon, crazy, you know...
Pony-eating monsters.
Yeah, maybe even that. Maybe it'd be just about them all dying forever. Because, you know, once McDowell writes it, that's how it is. It doesn't change.
Yes.
Then maybe.
But never. And the world drowns in a pool of brony tears.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, God.
Nice.
Can't believe he used that word in this podcast. That's just not right. Okay, out of all the side series, I think it's safe to say that BPRD is the best one.
That's the main one since Hellboy finished.
Yeah, but it's got so many characters and it's so tied in, and especially with this Hell on Earth stuff, you know, it's so. But okay, aside from BPRD, what's your favorite series? Like, you got Sledgehammer, Witchfinder, Johnson, or Abe Sapien. How would you rank those?
That's tough. I'd probably put Lobster Johnson first out of those.
Yeah, I can see that.
And then maybe Witchfinder next, and then Sledgehammer, and then Abe. And you know, don't get me wrong, I really enjoy Abe, and I've reviewed a lot of the issues, and I give them good reviews. I think it's great, but I enjoy those other ones a lot.
See, I had the same list, except it'd be Abe and then Sledgehammer. And
okay.
I say that because, for me, the first artist on Sledgehammer kind of turned me off a little bit. I didn't like Latour's noses, and it bothered me.
Okay.
I'm very picky when it comes to art.
The second one, though, Lawrence Campbell, who we interviewed.
Yes, the second one was way better and just fantastic. I mean, obviously. But I want to say the new Abe, the way he looks now and what he's doing now is what's doing it. If we hadn't gotten a new Abe since the first two trades that came out,
yeah,
which weren't as good as it is now, I dare say that Sledgehammer would be above Abe, and we'd have the same list.
Well, what's cool about Abe is that it's quite different from BPRD, which is the other, you know, fully ongoing series. Like, Abe is more about Abe on his own dealing with regular people who are themselves dealing with Hell on Earth. So it's just like ordinary people responding to basically monsters everywhere and shit.
Monsters everywhere and shit, indeed.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's still got that same BPRD flavor. You know, like,
yes, well, of course.
Crazy and spooky and, you know, blood and guts and shit, but...
Well, Phoenix was in it for a while, a BPRD character.
Yeah, she did make an appearance. Well, I mean, she's arguably the reason why Abe looks the way he is.
Oh, that's true. Looks the way he does. That's true.
She shot
Abe. There's going to be some big stuff coming in that series, though, with all of... I mean, they've been foreshadowing since, like, the beginning of Hellboy that Abe is playing a role in this Hell on Earth and this new race of man.
Well, and I mean, that's the reason why Phoenix shot him in the first place.
Exactly. And why Devin covered for her, yeah.
I mean, there's everything. If Mignola says that, you know, Phoenix had a bad feeling about Abe, well, you can bet your fucking ass that something crazy is going to happen and Abe's going to do something that he either doesn't want to or shouldn't do, and it's going to be cataclysmic to everything else.
Definitely.
Did you know that the new Witchfinder series, Mignola's not even co-writing?
I did know, yeah. I saw it in... I hadn't seen anything about it when we talked about this last week, but since then I've gone through the latest release of the previews, and yeah, his name's not even anywhere on it.
I didn't know. I knew that somebody else like this, Kim Newman, was coming in to write, but I didn't know that he wasn't involved as far as writing goes. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I'm still going to give it a shot, though.
I'm a lot less excited about it, though.
So am I, but I'm going to check it out.
Yeah, I'll check it out just because I like Edward Gray, and I like the Victorian Witchfinder. I mean, in the words of Christopher Golden, the Victorian stuff is like in Mignola's blood. Like, that's his favorite stuff. He loves that.
Yeah, definitely.
It's probably the only reason why we have a Sir Edward Gray.
Yeah, that's kind of weird that he ended up getting his own spin-off title, because he has such a small role in the main Hellboy series. He just kind of shows up as a side character here and there, and they don't even really tell you who he is.
Maybe that's why, and maybe Mignola just wanted an excuse to write a Victorian something story, right?
Yeah, he's going to play a bigger role. Like, he's you know, arguably one of the main characters in Hellboy in Hell.
Yeah, I guess, eh?
Yeah.
I always forget that he's that guy. I don't want to say any more than that, just because that is a little newer, but...
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, that's true. That was a shock. That I didn't see coming.
No, me neither. That was awesome.
Yeah, no, I mean, again, more great ways to use a character that, you know, is underused and people seem to really gravitate towards him. So, I mean, it was a good choice. Damn, now I got to read Hellboy in Hell again, man.
Yeah. Well, there's the new issue's coming out soon. Everybody who's reading that, I think it's issue number 6. It's
coming out in May.
Yeah, so I'm quite looking forward to that.
Soon is relative, but yes, it's coming out soon.
Soon is relative when there's like how many months in between each issue?
Lots.
Yeah, too many.
For example, Hellboy and Hell number 6 is called The Death Card. It's coming out in May. Hellboy and Hell number 5 came out in December.
Yes.
3 Gold Whips. Which is a great story. I actually really like that one.
Yeah, it was a good little one-shot story.
Yeah, which is pretty much all they're doing now.
Yeah, I guess so.
That's Mignola said he's not... He really doesn't want to do more than, like, 3, maybe 4... issue arcs. Like, yeah, matter of fact, I think he said that after that first initial 1-4,
yeah,
you're not going to see an arc that long for a long time.
Oh, okay. It must be Arcudi who's keeping these big arcs around in BPRD right now.
I'm sure it helps. I mean, but Mignola he's always wanted to do Hellboy in Hell because it's complete freedom. He's not, you know, I remember reading when he was doing the island and he had to research Japanese architecture, and he hated it. He didn't like that. So when he's in Hell, he can draw whatever he wants because there is no reference, right? If he wants to imagine a building. Sorry, what?
No, it's okay. Go ahead, continue.
You said it looks like.
It's like he has no reference, and Hell in Hellboy in Hell doesn't look like how people would picture it, I think.
No, but I love what he did with it, like the pandemonium. I mean, that's playing off of, I just forgot what it was.
Pancakes?
No. No. The famous story about Hell. And I just totally escaped me.
Paradise Lost?
Yeah, there you go. That's where that came from.
Yes.
The capital city of Hell and stuff. So there's some, I guess, points. But I just read the synopsis of Hellboy in Hell 6, and he says Hellboy revisits an old vampire acquaintance in the bowels of Hell.
Oh, shit.
If that's fucking...
Jurescu.
Yeah, that's just going to be wicked.
Oh, that is awesome, man.
I really hope it is. Oh, man. But you know what? As not as often, I guess, as we see Hellboy in Hell, the issue. There's so much other stuff, and, you know, I would say getting one issue is totally worth it. I mean,
let's see,
Hellboy in Hell 5 was December, Hellboy in Hell 4 was March. So if I gotta wait 6 months for every Hellboy, I mean, so be it, but it's gonna be worth it.
Like, how many issues of BPRD and everything else do you get in between that time?
Well, there's a BPRD every month.
Yeah, exactly.
Abe Sapien looks like it's every month. Looks like Abe Sapien is skipping April.
Okay, yeah.
But we have Lobster Johnson.
Which has been really consistent.
Yeah. Basically, I'm looking at the schedule, and for stuff that's outside of BPRD and Abe, since November, it was Lightning War, then it's Lobster Johnson, then it's Witchfinder. Like, excuse me, you're not skipping any months.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just constant. And then... Abe's skipping April, I think, because that's the end of their the Last Man arc.
And then
it looks like he's getting another 3-issue arc. Like, it doesn't go into August yet, but basically, BPRD is completely consistent the whole time.
Yeah, always.
BPRD hasn't missed, according to this source, since Hell on Earth started. After the King of Fear in 2010, they missed 2 months, and then we started with Hell on Earth New World number one.
And since they haven't missed one since.
They haven't missed 1 month.
That's awesome. And it's always good.
Oh, it is. I mean, that's including like 1948 and stuff.
Which they release at the same time as the regular BPRD series.
Yeah, some of that stuff did come out at the same time. I really got to get the next trade because it's got Return of the Master and Abyss of Time in there. I knew I should have bought another one when I was at the comic shop.
Oh, Return of the Master is, to borrow a phrase from Derek, it's banana pants crazy.
Derek, we miss you, you dirty slut.
Yes.
Oh, man. I really hope he does listen to this one so he can hear us bugging him and calling him a dirty slut. otherwise, what's the point, aside for our own amusement?
Yeah. But, BPRD people should check out right now if they're not already, or if they're, you know, they've been taking a break from it for some crazy reason.
It's among
the best it's been.
It falls under the category, man, of people are afraid of big numbers.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, okay, some people are. I won't say all of them, because some people are like, whatever, I'll just start right here. Like, they don't care. They'll just start reading it, they'll love it, and then they'll go back. I mean, obviously, like, the big two, baby everybody, and oh, here's a number one, little baby, because big numbers scare you.
To quote Jonathan Hickman last week, Manhattan Project's number 19 comes out this week. A good jumping on point was issue number one.
Yes, I did love that. That was fantastic.
Classic.
And then he went on about his New Avengers was a point now issue. And he's like, New Avengers point 20 is 20 point, have they fired Hickman yet? And 21 point, we're sorry you had to deal with Hickman this whole time. And he went on to like 25. It was actually pretty funny.
Jeez.
But
the big number thing, like I want to catch up with everything. I want to understand what's going on. So I went back and I bought the BPRD stuff before I started.
As you should.
But there's a lot of it.
There is a lot of it. The first four omnibuses? The first four collections that are large, they cover everything up to Hell on Earth. Hell on Earth hasn't been collected.
Yeah, it's all Flying Frogs.
Because I interviewed Scott Adley last year, and he said, and of course I asked that because I love hardcovers. He said they're not sure where or when Hell on Earth is ending, so we don't know how to collect it yet.
Okay.
So, but you get. For example, okay, I just flicked on Amazon, BPRD, Plague of Frogs, Volume 1, the big omnibus, hardcover is telling me it's basically $26.
Yeah.
You can get all three, it looks like, for like $70-$75 or so. And that is a whole hell of a lot of BPRD in one go.
Yeah, for a great price.
Yeah, like it's stupid to not buy them. It's stupid to go back and just get one trade or two trades just because of how good of a price you're getting and how much story you're getting in each omnibus. I can't actually find how many are in there right now because I'm talking about it, and that's how my my luck works.
I think that there's three individual trades in each omnibus.
That's what I think too, but I just couldn't find exactly where that information was.
Yeah, yeah.
But yes, I do think you're right that there's three trades per omnibus.
And the series right now, probably the best it's ever been. Like, Liz is like the coolest she's ever been. Johann Kraus, awesome character.
Dude, I saw him in the series with Damio in The Long Death. Right? I just read that today. Like, that is some badass Johann.
Yeah, he's a great character. So he's really prominent now. Liz is like the best she's ever been. The slew of new characters are fantastic. Like Agent Howards, we talked about quite a bit last week. And then there's Yosef, who's the head of the SSS, which is the Russian counterpart of the BPRD. Like they're great characters.
Who's creepy as fuck.
Yeah, but he's cool, man.
Oh, he is cool. He's cool. I still can't find my answer to how many's in there. It's volume one is 400 pages, so I'm going to assume that Joey's right. I almost called you Derek. That Joey's right, and you get three trades for essentially the price of like one Marvel hardcover. You're getting three trades in a hardcover.
Yeah, definitely.
Because a Marvel hardcover is $25. So there you
unfortunately.
Go. Yeah, yeah. See that bullshit? You're getting better story, it's fucking cheaper, and it's a hardcover. You cannot go wrong.
Fucking A.
So buy those four, man. Seriously. You buy the first one, and anybody that wants to, you know, send us an email or tweet us or something, tweet us how much you loved it, because there's no doubt. So that first one is some of the best ever, and obviously it just gets better from there.
Yeah, it just gets better from there.
But, I mean, Guy Davis just kills it on that.
Yeah.
And, which is, you know, it's funny how good he is and how noted he is for that. If you look at his, like, Twitter, he doesn't even mention that he worked for that he drew for BPRD.
And he did for a long time, too.
It's like he's, I don't want to say ashamed of it, but it's like he's tired of the recognition of being the BPRD guy.
Yeah, well, I was about to say, it seems like, you know, we were saying a lot of the Mignolaverse artists, their style has some similarities to Mike Mignola. But in BPRD, specifically, a lot of the artists, it really looks like sort of Guy Davis work, especially when you look at somebody like Tyler Crook.
Oh, yeah. Tyler Crook is just like I don't want to say a clone of Guy Davis, but it's like he's very influenced by Guy Davis and whatnot. And even if you look at Tyler Crook's art in his creator-owned work, Petrograd, where he actually drew like Rasputin in Russia during that time.
Oh, shit.
Which is really cool. If you see that from Ani Press, man, pick it up. It's really cool.
Awesome.
It's cool to see Tyler Crook before BPRD. And I remember I interviewed him too, and I was like, so did Mignola pick you for your art or because you'd already drawn Rasputin? And he's like, I don't know. That's a good question. But no, it's still a really, really good story. It's basically about them killing Rasputin, I guess.
That sounds really good, actually. Like, that's a pretty crazy historical event. I should check that out.
Yeah, it's really, really good. And it comes in a cool little hardcover, and it's not too expensive, if I remember right. So,
Then the current arc of BPRD is probably my favorite out of the whole, you know, 117-issue run. And that's got, I think, is probably your favorite BPRD artist as well as mine, James Herron.
Oh, I've been tweeting about James Herron today, reading the BPRD trade, and it's just been great. I got a kind of a Mignolaverse Twitter. It's at Mignolaverse.
Okay, did you start that one?
Yeah, it was me.
Oh, okay.
See, I haven't officially told anybody yet, so I figured I'd just tell it here.
Okay, right on.
I don't want to get too confused with the site or whatever thing. It's kind of just my own thing, you know, just talk. And over there, I can retweet stuff from other sites, like the one that I mentioned last show that I said I'd never mention again.
Yes.
Because they do a lot of good stuff for the Mignolaverse. I don't care about the rest of their stuff, just their Hellboy stuff and whatnot.
So, yeah, fair.
I figured, let's do it. And plus, you know, it was available, so how could I not? Right? I can't just get that, you know, that Twitter handle and not use it.
Yeah, true enough.
But yes, the cat's out of the bag. I'm sorry if that spoiled it, if you thought it was somebody important or cool that, you know,
No.
You're like, yeah, I'm unfollowing right now.
One less follower by tonight.
Yeah, Jesus Christ. Well, then give me an even 100 then. But yes, anyway, sorry. James Herron is amazing. His action is second to none. The motion, I was talking about it, the fight scene that he does between the Wendigo and Daimyo in the were-jaguar form is one of the best ones I've ever seen. Any monster fight in any medium, I don't care what medium it is. It was so good.
Everything he does with Agent Howard's looks fucking crazy.
Oh, yeah, with a sword. Oh, fuck. I know.
He's always, like, leaping from the top of buildings and shit onto these gigantic monsters.
And just, like, slicing, like, oh, hey, we can't get into this barrack because was the one they were hiding behind, like, a bunker, like, in Germany.
Yeah.
And he, like, jumps in behind them and just ices them all. And he's just, like, standing there all covered in blood, like, no big deal.
You guys coming? One guy's like, yeah, they're not going to be reloading anymore. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, we're good.
Awesome.
Unfortunately, though, I think that's it, man. We're out of time.
Yeah.
That was two shows. Derek, you're a dirty slut, and we missed you on the show, even if you'd never really talked in the first show. Because Joey's got a very powerful personality, and obviously you all know me. I'm very, you know, quiet and sheepish. And yeah, we just love talking about it. So I don't be surprised if we have a BPRD show specifically down the line. sometime, or you know, Hellboy in Hell or something. We're trying stuff. We're loving stuff. Maybe we get some creators on board. See how that goes. But trying to hit my exact hour mark. Joey, any final words? You got about 10 seconds.
There is a Conan story that Mike Mignola writes, 3 issues, and there are frogs in it. And it's very Mignolaverse-esque. Check it out.
I own all 3 of those single issues, just those. It's amazing.
Fantastic.
So definitely. So hey, for the comic shoot, I am Tyler. That is Joey. This has been our part 2 of our 2-part Hellboy Mignolaverse Mike Mignola BPRD series. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Comment, rate us, tweet us, and we will see you next time.
Good evening.